Braves and baseball fans, it's time to take a trip from coast to coast across Major League Baseball.
There it goes, a long drive. If it stays fair, home run.
One strike away. Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch. Swung out and missed a perfect game.
Fly ball deep left center. Grissom on the run. Yes! 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 The Atlanta Braves have given you a championship. Listen to this crowd.
Left side, Swanson to first. Braves, world champions.
Braves and baseball talk. Straight from the diamond.
Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today. And Window Nation. Call the pros at Window Nation at 866-90-NATION.
Here's Grant McCauley.
Hello and welcome into From the Diamond. I am Grant McCauley. These are the Kia Studios, the Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is a Sunday, which means a number of different things. And unfortunately, the next couple of hours, I cannot make you the promise that they're all going to be good. In fact, many of them are going to be downright ugly, because that is what the second half has turned into for an Atlanta Braves season that challenging, frustrating, baffling at times, you bet. But the second half of baseball for the Atlanta Braves has been downright cruel and unusual in a number of different ways that we're going to have to get into on this edition of From the Diamond. Again, I am Grant McCauley. You can follow me on social media. You can find me on most platforms at Grant McCauley, where I will be posting about the Braves and the things that have gone on. So if you have been following me in the last week, maybe some mild spoilers for what's been going on. And none of it, again, has been particularly promising. You can also, of course, subscribe to From the Diamond wherever you get your podcast. You can find it on the Odyssey app. And if you are subscribing to the podcast, appreciate it if you leave a rating and a review for the show. Not for the season, but for the show. That would certainly be appreciated. We are trying to grin and bear it, I guess, as best we can with what has been, again, frustrating, challenging, baffling, all of those things. But it has turned very, very ugly for the Atlanta Braves in the 9 games since the second half began. And you might be saying, well, it just feels like more of the same. And you wouldn't be wrong, because this has been a season in which the Atlanta Braves have at times not been able to do the things that they need to do, things that are in their control, and things that they have been able to do historically in terms of hitting, scoring runs, things of that nature, things that help you win baseball games. And then it has been coupled with things that are out of their control, which is, of course, injuries. And the Braves, as far as injuries are concerned, I was really, really hoping. I know all of you listening out there, all of the fans of the Atlanta Braves that went through 2024 and had to watch that whole parade of injuries and replacements come and go and come and go all season long. And some of the major injuries to, you know, major superstars as well for the Braves, and Ronald Acuña Jr. and Spencer Strider, multiple other players spending months on the injured list. I think we're all hoping to just kind of leave that in the past, leave that in 2024 and hope for some better health in 2025. But I've got to point out that while hope is a beautiful thing, it is not a plan. And unfortunately, it's not something you can guarantee either. And the Braves have been unable to do that as far as stay healthy is concerned. And they've been unable to find the consistency they need to at the plate. And I've had a lot of discourse on social media. I'll start there, because what a great place for content that always is. Now, I joke. I do enjoy talking baseball with the vast majority of the people that I get to talk baseball with. It is a privilege, even in a down year. I mean, it's a pretty cool job to be able to watch baseball and talk about baseball. And this is a really great day for baseball, by the way. I'm going to go outside of events in Arlington, Texas, and tell you that in upstate New York, in a little village called Cooperstown, the Hall of Fame grew by 5 players today. I think that's a beautiful thing. We're going to talk a lot about that later on in the show. I had a chance to sit down on Friday and chat with the president of the Hall of Fame, Mr. Josh Rauch. You will hear that interview a little bit later on. We'll also hear from the inductees in Cooperstown. All of this is what we refer to in the business as a tease. And maybe I'm just delaying the inevitable of what the rest of the first hour is going to be. And that is a deep dive. It's the thing I do. Roll up my sleeves and try to get under the hood and figure out what's been going on with the Atlanta Braves. And the bottom line is, the answers are just not there in terms of how do you fix what is broken for the Braves, because there are some broken items for the Atlanta Braves. The lineup has been broken this year in a number of different ways. But it's not just an assembly problem. It is a malfunctioning of different parts at different times. The injuries certainly don't help, but that really hasn't been the overall problem when it comes to the lineup. It's just been flat-out inconsistency. The lack of big hits, the inability to string those hits together, and do the things that you need to do to score runs. I'm not saying you got to change your offensive identity, and that's a difficult thing to do, by the way, over the course of a year. I mean, you can look at Tim Hyers, who I do think is a very capable hitting coach, but, you know, he can't turn water into wine. He is unable to walk up there and physically help the players through the process of hitting in any given at bat, any given night, any given series, any given season. You get where I'm going with this. So I'm not a big, like, let's scapegoat the hitting coach, because the Braves have already done that. Kevin Seitzer is the hitting coach in Seattle. And outside of Cal Raleigh, let me point this out, because I've had a lot of people be like, oh, well, Kevin Seitzer's got Seattle rolling. Well, not really. He's got Cal Raleigh rolling, I guess, if you want to give Kevin Seitzer credit for that. Some or all credit might be due to the various players who, of course, will appreciate the coaching and the support and all the things that they get to have a good season and to get through a long season. It takes a village, as the old saying goes. But I think it's bigger than just scapegoating the hitting coach. It's more of needing to find ways to game plan better, but to execute at a higher level. Because outside of Ronald Acuña Jr., and we're going to have to get into some of the changes that the Braves have made over the last, oh, about 8-9 games now, I guess it is, 9 or 10 games. I think Ronald sat in one of those games, but bottom line, right before the All-Star break, when the Braves decided to change their batting order, I'm one of those people that I would tell you if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but that would not apply to the Atlanta Braves lineup because, as I just mentioned, it's been broken. It's been broken for a while. It hasn't been performing for a while. If you had 8 cylinders, well, typically the Braves, they only had about 3 or 4 of those cylinders firing. And Ronald was one of those cylinders. But I also feel like he is the one that needs to be setting the tone at the top of the order because that's what I feel like he does best. That's where I feel like he belongs. But I can understand the temptation of wanting to try something, anything, to kickstart this lineup. And in doing so, the Braves have shuffled a few pieces around. Matt Olson's been swinging the bat pretty well. He's been batting second. Ronald had been batting first. You got Jurickson Profar back from that suspension. He had been hitting in the middle of the order. They decided to put him at the top of the order. I would certainly not say that that's been a dynamic, game-changing force for the Atlanta Braves. And I'm not trying to heap this all on Jurickson Profar either. Ronald Acuña Jr., since moving to the 3 spot of the order, that has not been the big hit that the Braves are looking for. Ronald has hit 2 homers. He's driven in 3 runs. If we were looking to give Ronald more RBI opportunities, knocking in a run every 3rd or 4th game, probably not the rate of return that you want for your number 3 hitter. But again, this is more than just one guy. More than just one bad week or one bad month for this team in general. This has become a troubling trend for this team. And we're going to dive into a lot of this when I get to this week in Braves baseball, which unfortunately is going to sound a lot like last week in Braves baseball and the week before that in Braves baseball and the week before that and before that and before that. Because this has become a pattern for this club. And when something is a pattern for a long enough time, it kind of becomes who you are. And who the Braves are a flawed offensive club. How they fix that, if they knew, I can promise you, they would have already flipped that switch, pulled those levers, and done anything possible to turn their season around in ways that, you know, that they could. The controlling the controllables kind of thing. But they've been unable to do that. It just flat out hasn't happened. And now, as I've talked about the lineup and all the things that have gone wrong with that all year, but you already know that if you've watched this team for any length of time in 2025, then the problem becomes injury on the pitching side. Because if one thing was propping you up as you had the struggle to score runs consistently, it was the pitching. And primarily, it was the starting rotation. And now, the starting rotation, as of opening day for the Atlanta Braves 2025, all 5 men are on the injured list. Grant Holmes was placed on the injured list earlier today with elbow inflammation. He cropped up, I guess, in his start last night against Texas. He was hit with a line drive, but they were quick to point out, I believe, Wiley Ballard of FanDuel Sports, among others, talking after the game to Brian Snitker, who revealed that the discomfort was already there. The line drive, I guess, was just adding insult to injury. But putting that all aside, adding insult to injury has been something the Braves are really starting to specialize in. It's really starting to feel a lot like, and I know it's not on purpose, trust me, but man, you can't win for losing, you can't get out of your own way, you can't do the things that you expect to do, the things you're supposed to do, the things that you have to do to be a winning baseball club. It's just not happening for the Braves this year, and it is frustrating, maddening, and baffling to try and find answers for why this club, with a bunch of guys that should be primarily in the primes of their individual careers, unable to string together the offense that you need to score. 4 or 5 runs on average, at least, and some nights that are going to be much higher than that just based on the fact that you've got a former MVP, a guy that set the franchise record in home runs, another couple of guys that are capable of 30 or 40 home runs and 100 runs batted in. I mean, this is who these guys have been, but it's not who they are right now. And things have just continued to go wrong and to spiral for this Braves club in the month of July. I've got some July stats that, I mean, I don't know, we may have to run a disclaimer before we run them just to make sure that it's, you know, for mature audiences. And by mature audiences, I mean people who are willing to put themselves through having to hear about just how bad this thing has gotten. Because the month of July, if you thought that some of the other months of this season were difficult to watch, July has become an amalgamation of everything that has gone wrong for the Braves in 2025 and everything that has gone wrong for the Braves really since back in May of 2024. Because the offensive trends year over year for this club, they've been concerning. In 2024, for the most part, I think they were doing what I would categorize in the nicest way possible is probably just enough. Not everything that you needed, but just enough. And right now, they're not doing enough of anything. Now, save a couple of nights, and it feels like that time once a week where the Braves offense gets rolling. They score 3 or 4 runs in an inning. They pile up 7, 8, 9 runs, and they start thinking, well, it's in there. It's capable. Are they turning the corner? Is this the moment? No, it's not. And I'm not going to allow you to think like that anymore because I just don't feel like it's fair for us to continue to put ourselves through that level of thinking. And the reason why is not because I'm cruel and not because I'm trying to rain on the parade of the season, but you have to look at the math of where the Braves are at this point. You know, can they make something of the final couple of months? Sure. But can they make something of the 2025 season? Doubtful. And by doubtful, I mean they're pretty much getting to the point where they got to play 750 or 800 baseball if they wanted to do that. And if you look at this Braves team and you want to tell me they're going to win 4 out of every 5 games, be my guest. But I don't see that as happening, particularly because, as I just mentioned and as we're going to get into here very shortly, the Braves pitching staff, in particular the rotation, is absolutely in tatters at this point. I will dive into those statistics. We will talk about that. We will, of course, dive into the Braves offense. I've got a lot of things that I've pulled on that. And, hey, look, before we get out of here in the first segment, I do want to say something that's really nice, something that is a welcome sight. How about Michael Harris II with 2 more hits on Sunday, continues to pulverize the baseball. We'll talk a little bit about his resurgence. Better late than never, most certainly. But I will tell you this, it's something Michael Harris needed to see. I think it's something Braves fans needed to see to get a reminder of just how good this guy can be. We're getting into some of that as we continue along here on From the Diamond. We've also got a big Hall of Fame discussion that will be happening later on in the second hour, so be sure to stick around for that. But when we come back, we'll get into this week in Braves baseball, and it was a rough one, and it wrapped up pretty rough in the state of Texas here over the weekend. We'll talk about it. This is From the Diamond. I am Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
I love baseball.
Now back to more Grant McCauley and From the Diamond. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer from Mark Spain Real Estate. 855-299-SOLD on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in to From the Diamond on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I am Grant McCauley live from the Kia Studios on a Sunday. 2 hours of Braves and Major League Baseball talk. And I don't know about you, but I'm just clinging on to that Major League Baseball talk because it was Hall of Fame induction weekend. I am looking forward to talking about that a little bit later on. I got a chance to listen to a lot of it, some of it on my way in, had it tuned in, and some of the speeches were just terrific. I mean, we'll get into it later in the show, but when we think about all the things that baseball can be and the way it connects us and the way the game is connected and the way that the people in the game interface with one another generation to generation, it's just a beautiful thing. And that's something that I think we need a little bit more of on this show and probably in this 2025 season. But I was also looking on Facebook a little bit earlier today because, you know, you get those memories that pop up. And it was 7 years ago today that I jumped on a plane with my dad and went up to Cooperstown for induction weekend, which, of course, was when Chipper Jones went in with that great big class back in 2018. And, man, what a cool weekend that was. It is a village, not a town, not a city. It is Cooperstown, but it is a village. And it is all baseball, wall to wall. You've got the Hall of Fame. You've got the museum. You had induction weekend, obviously, when we were going on there. I mean, if you could think of a player and a jersey and a team and a generation of anything, you could probably see it walk in the streets or in a shop in Cooperstown. Just beyond cool. So just wanted to throw that out there. Kind of fun to reminisce on that stuff. And we will dive into a little bit of the Hall of Fame stuff a little bit later. And we'll be joined by the president of the Hall of Fame, Josh Rawlich. I did have a chance to chat with him on Friday before this whole big weekend got started and talk to him a little bit about the class of 2025. Truly a unique, a very fun class. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I am, again, just delaying the inevitable, which is getting into this week in Braves baseball, which was a tough one. On this Sunday, the Braves lost by an 8-1 score. It was 8-1 by the bottom of the third inning. The Rangers had piled up those eight runs at the expense of Bryce Elder, who is going out there every fifth day. That's about all I can say because the Braves are looking for guys to do that. This rotation is just absolutely a shell of itself. And I will talk about that a little bit more later. But the Braves came into Sunday with a 6-14 record. They're now 6-15 here in the month of July. And when I talked about, you know, could it get any worse, when the Braves wrapped up the month of June, they were seven games under 500. And at that time, I still feel like you could, by looking at the schedule, the strength of schedule, which has been pretty soft for the Braves for the most part, a little bit tougher to start the second half, but no excuses. There have been 7, 10, 14, and more game runs where it feels like if the Braves could go on a run right there and find a way to stack up 5, 6 series victories, get themselves back to 500, they might still have a chance of salvaging their season running through the month of July, running up to the trade deadline, and maybe, just maybe, they could consider the options. But there are no options currently as far as saving the season. I mean, you go out there and you play for the integrity of the game and all those good things, and I'm just going to leave that right there. But you go out there and you do your level best, you want to think, to win a baseball game on a given day, but it's just not happening for the Braves and for a variety of reasons. But they went from 7 games under at the end of June, right now, to 16 games under 500. The Braves have not been in this place since the 2017 season. That was the last year of the rebuild, and they have lost every single series since the All-Star break. And with their 8-1 loss to the Texas Rangers on Sunday, they're swept right out of Arlington, and they will have to continue on the road and continue trying to do whatever they can to turn some things around. This whole season's just, I mean, turning that around, we don't even need to spend the time on it, I think, anymore. At this point, it's about some moral victories, which some people would say don't count, and those people I can't necessarily say are wrong, but trying to do whatever you can in whatever little ways you can to try to right the ship and close the season at least feeling a little bit better about what you have, because you're going to have some very long conversations about what you don't have and what went wrong this year as you try to reconfigure this roster in the winter after 2025. Now, this is easily the worst Braves season since 2017, as I mentioned. They were 72-90 that year. That's a .444 winning percentage if you're scoring at home, and I don't know why you would be. This year's team is 44-60 coming into Sunday. That's about a .420-ish winning percentage. Not great. They're on pace for over 90 losses this year. And they're now a staggering 16.5 games, at least as of the time of this show, in the 5 o'clock hour on a Sunday afternoon evening, out of first place in the East, but only 2 games out of last place in the National League East. And that's just not something that I felt like I would be saying about this Braves team at any point this year. If you're looking at the wild card, which I don't know why you would, it's not any less depressing than that. There are 11 games out there with a better record only than the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Washington Nationals, and the Colorado Rockies, who I hate to bring up, the Rockies are playing better baseball right now than the Atlanta Braves are, and they have been for a little while here. So where do you go from here? What's the next milestone? What's the next checkpoint? Well, it's the trade deadline. I think we know that. We've talked a lot about it and what the trade deadline could look like for the Atlanta Braves in a number of different scenarios when we were doing this show 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, where there still felt like there was that possibility, that little inkling, that wing and a prayer, that stranger things have happened. I brought up the 1914 Miracle Braves last week as a exercise in futility, if nothing else. But there's just not a lot you can do other than just start getting really real, really honest about where you are and right now where you're not. And unfortunately for the Braves, what they don't have. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that this pitching staff injury business, losing all 5 starters to the IL, is the thing that has broken the Braves' season. They were having so much trouble scoring runs that now I would make the case that even in the face of the injuries, if you had scored runs, if you played better in one-run games, if you had somehow managed to be at, around, just above, just below 500, you might be having some different conversations right now. But you can't score, and now you can't stop the other teams from scoring, and that has become a bit more of a problem for this Braves club. But the trade deadline is on Thursday. Who could be on the move? Well, obvious names. Marcell Ozuna, I believe. Raisel Iglesias. Those two I would expect to be traded by Thursday. What the return will be, I would temper my expectations. Maybe Pierce Johnson, Aaron Bummer. But beyond that, I don't expect any of the guys who are on the multi-year deals to be moved. And I know that's been a point of consternation for shows on this station, for Braves fans in general. And of course, as I mentioned, I get a lot of feedback, solicited or otherwise, on social media about how this team should be run. And right now, as I mentioned, this club in general, whether or not they're reading this stuff or not, they're going to have to sit around and really figure out how do we, A, fix the things that are broken, and B, set up this club to be able to do the things that it should be capable of doing in 2026 and beyond. Now, maybe you reassess the stance on the multi-year guys over the winter, whether or not that's the Sean Murphy, Drake Baldwin situation behind the plate, or others. But whatever you have to do to get things in order as best you can heading into the winter is important. And again, just about everything should be on the table, including who will manage this team. That obviously is a conversation that's been going on for a while. It's year number 49 in the Braves organization for Brian Snitker. He's been the manager since he took over in May of 2016. But is 2025 the last ride for him? Should it be the last ride for him? Should the Braves be looking to change the message? Should they be looking to go outside the organization in order to do that? Those are the kind of conversations that need to go on, that have to go on for the Atlanta Braves. And it's not all just about, hey, well, there was no leadership this year, and that's why the Braves aren't hitting. Those two things aren't necessarily connected to one another. The guys have got to perform on the field. That's the bottom line. No manager can make guys hit or make them pitch better. Can you utilize tactically some different situations where you can try to put guys in the best position? Yeah, sure. But if you deal with the kind of injuries you have in this pitching staff now at this point, I don't know what you do going forward. I got no answers for you as far as that's concerned. Sorry. I don't know if I'm saving you time right now or costing you time with that conversation. But is there something else you can do with this coaching staff, with this training staff? All of those things, all of this is going to have to be discussed. And if I'm Alex Anthopoulos and his crew, I would be very well aware, and I'm sure he is, because he's been doing this at a much higher level than I have for a very long time, that there are some things that are going to have to be addressed in this offseason. It may not just be, hey, do the Los Angeles Dodgers model and go out and sign the three or four best players out there and pay them 30% more than what every other team is offering for them. That may not be the solution for the Atlanta Braves, but something has to be done about this in order to get the Braves reconfigured for 2026. And the roster clearly needs to be fortified with necessary depth to make it through a season. We knew the Braves came into 2025 without the depth they needed in the bullpen. They had no Joe Jimenez. They had no replacement for A.J. Minter. And I think despite that, the bullpen pitched well enough through the month of June. The rotation is another story. They're going to seriously have to reevaluate that, I think, and really everything, again, needs that evaluation. Because we're sitting here on a Sunday, and as you may know, you may not be scoring at home, but I sure am on this. This is 10 straight weeks that I've come in and done a show after a Braves loss on a Sunday. And that's a bad thing on a number of different ways, because typically, you know, Sundays, that's the final day of a weekend series. A lot of times, that's the rubber match of a weekend series. On this particular Sunday, it was this trying not to be swept, which the Braves were unable to take care of. They've lost five in a row. They've lost 7 out of 8. They're 2-7 in the second half. The Braves are just trending flat out in the wrong direction. And Atlanta's rotation, I mean, it is no more. They now have Spencer Strider and a bunch of question marks in the other four spots. And at the start of the year, if you'll flash back, if you want to flash back to brighter times, the whole thought was, all right, well, let's just get Spencer Strider back in this rotation that has the reigning Cy Young Award winner, that has a guy who looks like he could be the real deal in Spencer Schwellenbach, that has some other pieces that are in place, that has another all-star in Ronaldo Lopez. And, of course, that reigning Cy Young Award winner, I don't think I said his name, but I will anyway, it's Chris Sale, and he may pitch again this year. I would expect him to if all goes according to plan, but will Spencer Schwellenbach pitch again this year? That's another thing they're going to have to figure out. So somehow Spencer Strider went from being the thing that could put the Braves rotation over the top to being the last man standing. And Spencer Schwellenbach's last start, as of that day, the Atlanta rotation had thrown the third most innings in the National League and the fifth most in Major League Baseball. So that starting rotation was covering serious innings, and it was covering up for the Braves' offense. Since then, though, the Braves' starting rotation has now thrown the third fewest innings in all of Major League Baseball. They are 28th in baseball since basically the end of June in innings out of their starting rotation. But the only teams with less are the Mets, an over 500 team, and the LA Dodgers, who came into the year with like 14 starting pitchers and still can't figure that whole thing out. And it's a huge mess for them, but they also have a few more things on their side. Let's just call it that. But Chris Sale, Spencer Schwellenbach, Ronaldo Lopez could all pitch again this year. Obviously, A.J. Smith-Shawver is done. We'll have to wait to see what is the determination on the extent of the injury to Grant Holmes' elbow, as he was placed on the injured list on Sunday. So should those guys come back has been a question I've been asked, and I would say this. If they feel physically that they are good to go and ready to go through that progression, I don't think that you can just ask guys to sit around and just not pitch. Because I do think that there is some benefit to coming back, not because the Braves need them to win some games, because at this point, winning games is almost counterintuitive because you're just doing damage to what you could potentially do as far as the draft pick next year. And I'm not a person that sits around and says, oh, how many losses we need? Let's go ahead and tank for a draft pick. Typically, that hadn't really been a baseball thing per se. I mean, some clubs have obviously done things of that nature, but it certainly wasn't part of the Braves vernacular. But I do believe it would be valuable for Sale, Schwellenbach, Lopez to try to get back on the mound again this year, even if it's just for a couple of innings, couple of outings, whatever it may be, so that they kind of go into the winter under more normal circumstances and not necessarily just on an extended rehab program and then trying to kind of sort out in spring training, which may not sound like much, but I do think it's an important deal. But what do the Braves do between now and then when any of those guys get back and between now and the end of the season? Joey Wentz has been a bright spot, but he's far from proven. Bryce Elder has been an absolute roller coaster, and we saw again on Sunday that, look, if you go into 2026 and Bryce Elder is still making starts every fifth day for this team, you're in the wrong place. And I'm not trying to pick on the guy because he's had his moments, and somebody's got to go out there and do it. And as the case was, you know, somebody's going to have to go out there and wear that sometimes. That's also been kind of an issue. But after that, in the minors, who's going to help? Is it Hurston Waldrop? Is it J.R. Ritchie? Is it Blake Burkhalter? Those are some prospects that we haven't seen yet that are sitting in AAA, but is it time to bring those guys up? Or are they all ready to be brought up? Because we saw with Didier Fuentes, you can bring up a talented young pitcher, and he may just not be ready for it. Now, those guys, I think, are a little bit older than Fuentes, but in terms of overall experience, we're not talking about guys who have been grown in the minor leagues that have just a fine amount of innings under their belts and are now in that next phase where it's just time for them to jump up and pitch in the big leagues. So we'll see. But you could go through some organizational filler. What does that mean? That sounds exciting, right? How about some organizational filler? Jackson Stevens, Davis Daniel, Austin Cox, Nathan Wiles. I mean, Ian Anderson's injured, so you're not going to hear his name. But this is the conversation that you're having to have. Is it, do we maybe see what we got in the future, which is a very good case to be made for, or do we just kind of hit pause on those guys and wait and see? Because one of the other little caveats to all of this is service time. If they come up after August the 15th, now you'd also have to factor in service time of certain arms who've already pitched in the big leagues, but just follow me here, then they would maintain their eligibility for potential Rookie of the Year consideration next year. And why does anybody care about that award right now? Well, because there's a compensatory draft pick tied to that. And you can also add that to your draft class. And as we saw this year, the Braves draft class might be one of the highlights of the year 2025. So we'll talk a little bit more about the starting rotation and the effects that are trickling down to the bullpen. Because the bullpen, I don't know if you need me to tell you, but I will anyway, because it's my show. That group has been wearing it. It's been pretty bad. We'll talk about how bad it has been as we continue with This Week in Braves Baseball, as Atlanta just looks to play out the string at this point. Trade deadline is looming. Some moves maybe to be made. Some selling to do. We'll talk about all of that. This is From the Diamond. I'm Grant McCauley, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Now, back to more From the Diamond. From the Diamond is brought to you by Window Nation. Get two windows free with every two you buy and pay nothing for 2 years. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back into From the Diamond on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I am Grant McCauley live from the Kia Studios on a Sunday as we continue to talk about the week that was, the half that has been thus far for the Atlanta Braves, and a season that becomes more forgettable, it appears, by the day for this Braves team as well. If you've tuned in after Atlanta's loss on Sunday, well, thanks for joining us. Unfortunately, you saw more of the same as Bryce Elder was knocked around for 8 runs early. The Braves lost by an 8-1 score to the Texas Rangers. They were swept in Arlington. They will continue their road trip. Next up, the Cincinnati Reds, I believe, is where they're going to be dealing with. Or I'll check it. Where are they going next? That could be a good question that could have been done with some basic research beforehand. Kansas City Royals. I knew I was forgetting somebody. Why am I forgetting the Royals? But, yeah, Kansas City Royals. Then you have the trip to Cincinnati and then to Bristol and then I think back to Cincinnati. So they're going to have quite the week to come. But, you know, again, I feel like you get into these conversations, you start making these points, which may not be points because you're just trying to distract yourself from the fact that what you're having to look at for the Atlanta Braves just does not lead itself back to conversations that, A, you thought you would be having when 2025 began, and B, and maybe more to the point, is you've just kind of had to wonder to yourself, you know, can it get any worse? And when you ask yourself that question, rhetorically or otherwise, life oftentimes will provide you with an answer. And unfortunately for the 2025 Braves, life is basically telling them, yeah, hold my beer. It can definitely get worse. And it has for the Braves. We talked about the rotation, which is now not a rotation. It is Spencer Strider plus 4. We don't know who's going to RSVP. We're not sure who the other 4 spots are going to be for sure. We have some suggestions, maybe. Leave those in the box. But there's just not a plan here. And there is no plan for when you lose an entire rotation. So putting that aside, the bullpen is paying the price for this, for these injuries. And I talked about a little bit earlier how many innings that the starting rotation had thrown up to the point where Spencer Schwellenbach was put on the injured list at the end of June. They'd thrown the 3rd most innings in the National League, 5th most in Major League Baseball. And in doing so, they had really helped out the bullpen. Because the bullpen, let's go back to that Spencer Schwellenbach final start before going on the IL. So since June 28th, the bullpen was sitting on a 3.65 ERA, which was 10th best in Major League Baseball. I believe top 5 in the National League, if I'm not mistaken. They'd also thrown the fewest innings of any bullpen in baseball at that point. The Braves were 30th in innings pitched out of the bullpen with 263 and two-thirds over basically April, May, and June. And it was last by a nice little margin. And now, you look at what's been going on, it's been the exact opposite since Schwellenbach's last start. So let's call it end of June, start of July here. The Atlanta bullpen has, prior to today, where the bullpen actually threw, I believe it was 5 1/3 scoreless innings, if I'm not mistaken, something like that, or at least, yeah, 5 1/3 scoreless. Not going to take a lot off of this, but a 5.11 ERA by the bullpen, 24th in Major League Baseball, and having thrown the 4th most innings of any bullpen in baseball since the end of June. 91 2/3 innings. And the second half has just been a disaster for this bullpen, though. There's just no way around that. They were able to whittle it down a little bit by some good work on Sunday, but in 31 2/3 innings coming into the day, the Braves had a 9.09 bullpen ERA. That doesn't sound like an ERA at all. It doesn't even sound possible. But it is, if you've watched some of the games and some of the performances, unfortunately, for the Braves, whose bullpen, again, has been overly taxed. I mean, you think about the physical tax bracket that the Braves bullpen is in, it's not a good one. And they don't have the personnel to be able to cover for this either, and that, I think, has been a problem. Because they don't have the depth, the quality depth, to cover the innings and deal with the fact that the closer has also been displaced for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And now you finally put Raisel Iglesias back in a place where it looked like he was going to be the 9th inning guy again. And what happens? He gives up a grand slam home run. And then he comes back on Saturday and unfortunately coughed up another one. I'm hoping, and just looking at the pitch mix from Saturday's game, that maybe he's going to put that slider back in the laboratory and figure that thing out over the winter, because he can't throw another one of those. We went in depth on that last week. But it's been more than just that. It's been more than just home runs on a bad pitch for Raisel Iglesias. It's been base runners all over the place. Walks have been problematic. And the Rangers, they did exactly what they needed to do to push that game into extras and to win that game on Saturday by getting a free base runner and by stealing a base and by coming up with a clutch hit. That's what they needed to do. Worst in baseball is what the Braves bullpen has been in the second half. Worse than the Rockies, worse than the Pirates, worse than insert your team that you think is bad's name here. That's how bad it's been for the Atlanta Braves in the bullpen. But the story of the season, I feel like, had really been the Braves' inability to score runs. Now, I'm not going to just continue to go into this over and over and over again, but their record could be a lot better than 16 games under 500 if they had figured out over the course of April, May, and June, and some in July, the ability to score a couple of more runs a handful of more times a month. And that might sound like some wishful thinking, and obviously with this offense, there has been a lot of wishful thinking this year, and not much of it has come to pass. But would they be able to get over losing five starting pitchers in July? I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all. Would they be considering the chance of picking up a couple of pieces, though, to help their rotation if they had been able to get those hits and had been a club that was around or just above 500? I think that they would. That's if they had the offense that they need, but they don't have it. And this once a week, 7, 8, 9 runs that they're scoring, sometimes even in back-to-back days, maybe more than once a week, that's just not really covering for this. The Braves coming into Sunday where they scored 1 run. So let's call it now. The Braves have scored 88 runs in the month of July. That is 19th in Major League Baseball. It's just over 4 runs per game, but it doesn't tell the true story because of how inconsistent it is with the 9 runs one day and then shut out the next day. That's not a consistent offense. So the other thing that you have to look at with this is the conversations around the trade deadline and kind of where the Braves find themselves. Marcell Ozuna, I think, has kind of been rendered obsolete by the fact that you've got the Drake Baldwin and Sean Murphy connection behind the plate. And those guys have both swung a good enough bat this year that they should be getting those at-bats because Marcell has essentially for 3 months been on a hiatus at the plate that unfortunately, you know, time, injury, it comes for us all, basically. And Marcell went from a guy who was the highlight, unquestioned, in 2024 of the Braves offense, the guy that carried the team on his back at times, and a guy who revived his career in 2023 with a monster season, to a guy who got off to a hot start and hasn't been able to find it since. And what are you going to get for that guy at the trade deadline? I would temper my expectations. But if you're able to get something that's a controllable piece, that maybe there's some upside, take a flyer, a lottery ticket, whatever you like to call these kinds of pickups, because it's not going to be top 5 prospect in all of baseball type. It might not even be top. I don't think it's going to be top 5 prospect in an organization type of a piece either, but maybe Alex Anthopoulos can pull a rabbit out of his hat in dealing away Marcell to a team that really wants him. I don't know. We'll see. But bottom line, you're not going to get a ton for him, but it's not really going to change your offensive mix that much either because you've pushed him out. The Braves have been outscored 115 to 87 this month. So they've scored 88 runs in the second half. They've given up a major league worst 56 runs. Make that 64 runs now in the 9 games of the second half, now counting Sunday. I'm going to have to go back and check this. One of these stats is not right. And I hate finding this kind of stuff on the air, and that's twice. But I'm honest, if nothing else. I'm going to go with these, though, because I know this one was right, and I reverse-engineered a couple of the other ones. But 38 runs scored in the second half, make it 39 now with one more on Sunday. But 25 of those runs came in 3 games. So that means in the other 6 games, you've scored 14 runs. It's very hard to win if you're scoring 2 runs per night, and your pitching staff has basically no starting pitcher, 1 starting pitcher, and your bullpen is also pitching to a 9 ERA. That's not going to add up to much in a good way. And here's another thing that I just did want to bring up. It's not the reason why the Braves aren't scoring runs. I think that they were already doing this just fine before they made this change. But the lineup change that had Ronald Acuna Jr. batting third, that's not moving the needle. Jurickson Profar has been okay, I guess. But are you looking for a leadoff hitter who is okay, I guess? I don't really think that's the case. But there is no reason, and this is just flat out the way that I feel about it, and I would imagine that the way that most people trying to be as pragmatic as they can would feel about it, there is no reason that Jurickson Profar should be getting the most plate appearances and most at-bats of anybody on this team. I just can't look at that and say that's ideal. However, I get trying something and seeing if it worked, but this ain't it. I'm just going to go ahead and call it after, 10 days, throwing the All-Star break, couple of weeks. It's just not working. Ronald Acuna Jr. coming into Sunday, and I believe he was hitless in this game, batting .206 with two homers and three runs batted in now 10 games as the Atlanta three-hitter. The Braves are 3-7 in those 10 games as well. And Profar, who is again hitting at the top of the lineup, is hitting about .250 and has scored seven runs in 10 games. On-base percentage in the .370 range. So again, he's been okay. But I just don't feel like this is worth the change. What is it? The juice here is just not worth the squeeze. But I understood maybe wanting to try something out. It's just not working. And a couple of things you do have that are working pretty well is Matt Olson, for one. He's batting over .300, on basing nearly .450 in the second half, but has just four runs knocked in because nobody's on in front of him. And it's not just Profar. It's also what's going on at the bottom of the order. Nick Allen has really disappeared at the plate. Not that there was a lot going on there before. And not that he isn't a great shortstop. And also, to throw another one in there, and not that he's the problem with this offense, but you're not putting much on in front of Matt Olson, who is now batting second. Austin Riley's back from his abdominal injury. Probably going to take him a little bit of time to get back and locked in. He looked pretty good at the plate prior to going on the IL. But again, Atlanta just cannot seem to catch a break. And now Austin Riley will just have to hit the ground running. And Atlanta's going to need him to produce in the middle of this order if this lineup is going to do much. That's just all there is to it. A few other Braves notes and things that we're going to save for a little bit later on in the show, but I'll just give you the advanced warning that it just brings up more questions than it does answers. One good thing, though, that we did see in Texas, and one good thing that we've been seeing in the second half, has been the play of Michael Harris II. Two more hits on Sunday. Harris batting over .400 in the second half, looking much more like the capable hitter that he has been at times in his big league career. He has been streaky. It's been a little bit up and down for him. But Michael Harris, you just knew the talent's in there. How are you going to get those results again? It seems like changing his batting stance has allowed him to do that. So, looking a little bit better at the plate is Michael Harris. We'll talk about that a little bit more as we go along. And then, of course, there's a question about Ozzie Albies and his future with the Atlanta Braves. That's, again, you talk about everything being on the table. In the offseason, I think that there are a lot of decisions, a lot of conversations for the Braves, Alex Anthopoulos and his crew to have. And we'll stick a pin in that for now. When we come back, though, I'll share with you my conversation with the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, Josh Rauch, who joined me on Friday to talk about the class of 2025. Some very, very distinguished, very, very well-deserving players all enshrined in Cooperstown on this fine Sunday. We'll do that next on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Now, more From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer from Mark Spain Real Estate. 855-299-SOLD on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back into From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We embark on the second hour of the show, and we will turn our attention to what's happening in upstate New York as it is induction weekend up in Cooperstown. Five players are going into the Hall of Fame, a very deserving class. It includes Ichiro Suzuki, Billy Wagner, CeCe Sabathia, Dick Allen, and Dave Parker. Five very unique players with very deserving cases and careers. And they are being immortalized this weekend as they're inducted into the Hall of Fame and receiving their plaques. To help me talk about what is one of the greatest weekends in all of baseball, if you haven't had a chance to do it, I encourage you to make it up to Cooperstown. He is Josh Rauch. He is the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Well, Josh, a busy weekend, an incredible weekend, a great baseball weekend happening up in Cooperstown. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me. I know we've got a lot to talk about with the class of 2025.
We do. It's going to be an incredible weekend here, and I think there's just a ton of excitement in town. You can already feel the energy, and excited to welcome everybody up to Cooperstown.
Yeah, I want to throw this out there for those listening out there. If you have not been to the Hall of Fame, number one, you owe it to yourself to go up there. And number two, if you've not experienced an induction weekend, it may be a little bit crazy, but I can promise you it is totally worth it. I have experienced both of those, and it is one of the great baseball experiences, maybe the greatest baseball experience you can book as well. So let's spend a little bit of time on each of these men and kind of the class in particular I wanted to ask you about first, because it's a very nice size class, but some really unique candidates turned into inductees. And I'm sure you're excited to welcome each of these men into Cooperstown this weekend.
We are. I mean, that's one of the cool things about this is that there's 50 years of baseball history from going back to Dick Allen all the way up through Ichiro Suzuki, the most current in CC. So I think each one brings a certain special something to this induction class, and they'll always be linked by the fact that they went in together.
They most certainly will. Let's lead off with Ichiro Suzuki. He did a little bit of that in his career. One of the most incredible hitters our game has ever seen, but his candidacy, it really spans the globe, and while there have been a lot of other international stars, obviously, in the game of baseball, Ichiro really seems to have laid the foundation for becoming a transcendent player for his home country of Japan, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the 30-year history of basically since Nomo came as the first, well, Masanori Murakami 30 mm-hmm. years before that, but Nomo came in 1995, and to see where that's gone to having our very first ever Japanese inductee is just really incredible. And we actually are opening an entire exhibit this weekend. We opened a whole exhibit all about the Trans-Pacific exchange of the game and the way baseball has gone between these two countries. And for Ichiro, you're talking about somebody that had 7 batting titles in Japan before he came to the U.S., and then he came here and just did the same thing, and nobody knew what to expect out of a position player. And what he's done and the respect he has for the game's history and for the Hall of Fame itself just makes him such a unique Hall of Famer. We're excited for him to be standing there on Sunday.
Yeah, he truly is just a player the likes of which I don't know that we've ever really seen before. Sure, you've got guys who win batting titles. You've got guys that steal bases. You've got guys that have an 80-grade arm as well. But to put all of that together and to do it for as long as he did, I mean, I'm not sure that Ichiro Suzuki, even when he did finally retire, was really ready to hang up that uniform for good and call it a career so he could get that 5 years in the book so he could get voted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, he really isn't. He's not ready to hang it up. In fact, earlier today, he was just here locally throwing a ball around because he still keeps himself in great shape. He still works out with the Mariners on a regular basis. And he said, you know, one of the things I want to see in life is how realistic it is. You know, they tell you that the body's supposed to stop doing these things at a certain age, but he still plays baseball almost every single day. He takes great care of himself. He loves the game more than anything. And yeah, he's kind of defied the odds in a lot of ways, playing to the time that he did and just continuing now to do it almost every day, even during a trip like this. He's finding a way to stay in shape.
Well, if Satchel Paige can pitch at 59 years old in the major leagues, who's to say somebody won't call up Ichiro Suzuki and bring him back once again? Chatting with Josh Rauch, he is the president, the head of the Baseball Hall of Fame. It is induction weekend up in Cooperstown, so excited to have him on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. He joins me on the WadeFord.com hotline. Let's talk about a pair of pitchers who have earned this honor. Let's start with Billy Wagner, though that does seem kind of like an oxymoron. He closed out the candidacy on the writer's ballot by finally getting this call. Closers seem to be a really challenging group to handicap when it comes to the voting, but Wagner's strikeout ability and pure dominance for a very long time sets him apart amongst ninth inning guys and firemen in general. How happy were you to finally be able to call his name?
I mean, you saw the emotion on his face and you realized that he waited 10 years and I'm not sure he knew whether he was ever going to get that call. So it certainly, from our standpoint, we really don't consider a first ballot versus a 10th ballot or era committee versus the writers, that doesn't really matter mm-hmm. much to us, but you can see how much it matters to them. What he did over the course of his career, striking out one out of every three guys he faced, that's utter dominance. One of the lowest walks and hits per innings pitched in the history of baseball. For whatever reason, like you said, I think there's still a question maybe in some writers' minds whether relievers and the way the game's changed, whether they belong in the Hall of Fame. But I think when you're talking about Rivera and Wagner and Smith and Fingers and Gossage, Trevor Hoffman, these are some of the most dominant people ever to play the sport. And Billy is certainly deserving of it, and I know it's going to be an emotional day for him on Sunday.
No doubt about that. We got a chance to watch him in his final season here in Atlanta, where I think he was a great mentor to a young up-and-coming closer-to-be named Craig Kimbrell, who might one day be in Cooperstown as well. So his effect in the game in a number of different ways is certainly felt, and I think that's part of somebody's candidacy as well, what they give to the game. And for as long as he did, and to do at the level that he did, I think that regardless of position or the evolution of the game, there's a case to be made for Hall of Famers looking a lot of different ways. Kind of like you said, the first ballot thing, you don't have to get caught up on that. A Hall of Famer is a Hall of Famer, and I think Billy Wagner certainly earned his stripes there. Now, CC Sabathia is the last, I think, or one of the last, of a dying breed, a dominant workhorse starter. He posted great numbers for a very long time. He covered serious innings for a very long time. there's so few of those guys left, Josh, and maybe a few of these that we're seeing that are wrapping up their careers shortly are going to join him one day. But what stands out about CC Sabathia to you?
Well, he's such a big game pitcher. I mean, you think about what he did helping the Yankees, basically carrying the Yankees and winning several games in the postseason en route to the 2009 World Series, doing what he did for Milwaukee in the short time he was there, essentially putting them on his back down the stretch after being traded there. And then his time in Cleveland was equally as impressive in the postseason. And so this is a guy who's a workhorse. He'd take the ball. His teammates would talk all the time about what an incredible pitcher he was, but just an incredible teammate. He has such an amazing personality. People just want to be around him. And when you were talking about Billy and kind of what he gave to Craig Kimbrell, CC in so many ways, all these guys, they are also judged by their contributions to the game and the teams that they played on. That is part of the criteria. And in addition to sportsmanship and integrity and things of that nature, the contributions to the team or teams they played for is also part of what's considered. And CC was the ultimate team player.
Yeah, he made a tremendous amount of contributions to every single team that he played for. And he actually made quite a contribution to the All-Star game here in Atlanta. You knew they were going to celebrate Hank Aaron, but to find out that CC Sabathia was on the group that came up with that incredible tribute we saw at the All-Star game, I'm sure you've had a chance to see that. That was really something to behold, both live in person and, of course, on the television broadcast as well.
It was honestly one of the coolest things I've ever seen in a baseball stadium. And I've been working in the game for more than 30 years. And so, I had heard that they were going to be doing the tribute on the field. I know CC kind of came up with that idea of wearing the Babe and Hank's numbers during BP. And then what MLB did with the on-field tribute in the sixth inning of the actual game itself was just off the charts. And actually, the Hall of Fame, the Aaron family has given the Hall of Fame their entire collection. I was actually just with Billy Aaron right before this phone call, showing her the archives here and talking with her about the collection that Hank gave. She was at the ballpark that night watching it. And actually, we have loaned back to the city of Atlanta and to the Braves the home run bat and ball from 715, which you can see at Truist Park right behind home plate. And so just to think about the career that he had and what he's done and the way his career has been preserved here in Cooperstown, and then to see it on the field during the All-Star game was just off the charts.
Yeah, beautiful to see Billy Aaron there, to be able to see more than just memorializing Henry Aaron, but celebrating him for who he was. And as he said in the video board presentation, not just for the player that he was, but the person that he was as well. And I did get a chance to see the bat and the ball from 715. It's pretty incredible to be that close to history. So I know I can speak for a lot of Braves fans that would say thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to take in that little piece of history at a Braves game this year. As far as the past generations of baseball, a couple of very deserving inductees from the Eras Committee this time around. Dick Allen, a noted slugger over the course of his career, prolific slugger, let's call him that. Dave Parker, also one of those. And both of these guys seem to be in the discussion for a long time as well. I know Dick Allen came so close a couple of times and finally got over the hump here this past winter. Dave Parker, of course, joining him. Unfortunately, neither man will be able to accept the honor in person for induction weekend, but honoring their legacies, sharing it with their families, that's still a really special part of this weekend, isn't it?
It absolutely is. You know, in the case of Dave Parker, unfortunately, we just lost him very recently. But what I love is that in December, when we called to let him know the news, he was very aware that he was a Hall of Famer. He was still fighting Parkinson's with incredible courage, but he was able to do interviews and talk about what it meant to him. And then just a few months ago, we went and visited him in Cincinnati and gave him his Hall of Fame cap and his Hall of Fame jersey. Mm-hmm. And again, it was very clear, even though the disease continued to take its toll on him, that he's aware of what's happening. And so his family is here in town. His son will be giving the speech on Sunday, and his son looks very much like Dave looked during his prime. So it's pretty crazy to look up there and see what looks like the Cobra giving the speech. And then in Dick Allen's case, his widow will give that speech. Dick was really just an incredible offensive force, and he did it at a time when pitching was really the dominant part of baseball. So I think he's often underrated. Mm-hmm. Some of his numbers are really, you hear people put him in the same category as Mays and Aaron during that period of time when they were all at their peak. It obviously took them both, unfortunately, to the point when they were no longer alive, but I know that their family is going to celebrate and enjoy this whole experience. And we hope that they're looking down and enjoying what they rightfully deserve.
Yeah, a couple of cool stories about those two guys. Number one, just kind of a short one on Dick Allen. If you collect baseball cards from the decade of the 1960s and you're a fan of those league leader cards because you can get them with multiple Hall of Famers on them, you would find Willie Mays and Hank Aaron and Willie McCovey and Roberto Clemente and all these guys and Dick Allen would oftentimes be on those cards with him. So he was right there in that era, really setting the tone as far as prolific sluggers are concerned, and great to see him get that celebration. Now, I was in Dallas when the announcement was made for both of these guys to be elected to the Hall of Fame. I was standing right next to a gentleman who was probably, I would say, in his mid-50s. He was wearing a gold Pittsburgh Pirates jersey that said 39 on it and said Cobra instead of Parker on the back. I talked to him briefly before the announcement, and then I got to see his reaction. He had traveled a long way from Pittsburgh, obviously, to see if Dave Parker was going to get in. I think that's a real thing about the beauty of this game, the connection of the generations and the celebration of it that's really going to be on display this weekend, to see so many generations of fans be able to celebrate their favorite players and the greatest players of multiple eras. And I know you've got a lot of those great players on hand for induction weekend coming up here with all of the celebrations you guys are going to be doing in Cooperstown, don't you?
Yeah, we've got 55 returning Hall of Famers, and actually everybody's made it to town. I think at this point I've seen almost everybody that's going to be here. And the guys that are getting inducted represent more than half the teams in the league. I think 16 teams, as you mentioned, Billy representing Atlanta. But you can literally go around the whole country, and then you get into a whole other country in Japan.
Yeah.
So to have the kind of the level of fandom that's all going to be celebrated here, and as they ride down Main Street in the parade on Saturday night, and then on Sunday the speeches are being made, we're just we're incredibly excited for all that to happen. And looking forward to a tremendous rest of the weekend.
Wrapping up with Josh Rauch here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. He is the head of the Baseball Hall of Fame. Of course, induction weekend, big celebration happening in the village of Cooperstown. I wanted to wrap up with this. I think these committees, to kind of go back to the point about Dave Parker and Dick Allen getting their due, are playing a pivotal role in kind of assessing and recognizing players and, of course, personnel who didn't get in through the traditional writer's ballot. How would you assess the effectiveness of the changes and the revamping that the Hall made not too long ago to have a focus on multiple groups and multiple times and eras in the game's history to really try to identify some of those candidates that may have gone overlooked or been waiting for a very long time?
Well, that's really the purpose of the era committees. I mean, obviously the writers have done an amazing job over the years since the beginning of the Hall of Fame, the 1930s, of determining who they believe belongs in the Hall. But you can't say everybody's going to get it right every time. Yep. And so the era committee process is really intended to give people a second shot. And we saw a few years ago with someone like Fred McGriff.
Mm-hmm.
He took 16 people, and they were Hall of Famers, they were executives, they were historians, and Fred went 16 for 16 and got elected. Of course, this time around, it was Dave Parker and Dick Allen. But we feel like the process works very well. But every time we think that there's a need for a little bit of a change, we try to make that. And so we make small adjustments. We certainly don't try to change the process in order to elect people. We have the process in place in order to make sure they get reviewed and they get a fair shake. And that's really what it's all about. And we think that's what's been happening.
Yeah, really is great to hear. And just seeing the Dave Parkers of the world make it into the Hall of Fame. Jim Rice, not too terribly long ago. It has this young Braves fan who grew up on TBS keeping his fingers crossed for Dale Murphy getting the call to the Hall one of these days in Cooperstown as well. Josh, thank you so much for all of your time. I really appreciate it. Good luck with everything you're going to be doing this weekend, and have fun celebrating what I think is the greatest game we have ever known.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it, and hopefully everybody gets a chance to come see us in Cooperstown, check out all the amazing things we have here.
He is Josh Rauch, the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. Induction weekend, of course, is happening on this fine Sunday. When we come back, we will hear from some of the electees and their families, the speeches that were had on this fine Sunday for induction weekend. It comes your way next on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley as we continue talking Braves and Major League Baseball right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Talking Braves and beyond.
Baseball!
With From the Diamond. From the Diamond is brought to you by Window Nation. Get two windows free with every two you buy and pay nothing for 2 years. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back to From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're live from the Kia Studios on a Sunday. Great to have an opportunity to chat with the president of the Hall of Fame, Josh Rauch, who gave me a lot of time on Friday when we were able to catch up. You know what was interesting about that, too, was he casually name-dropped. You know, I just got done talking with Billy Aaron, of course, the widow of the great Hank Aaron, and the fact that the Hall of Fame has acquired the entire Aaron family baseball collection of memorabilia. Now, when I went in 2018, the uniform that Hank Aaron wore when he hit home run number 715 on April 8, 1974, off Al Downing, over the left center field wall, and if you watch that All-Star tribute to Hank Aaron, which was, as we talked about just a few moments ago, pretty cool little deal right there. Hadn't seen anything like that on a baseball field, but great way to honor Hank Aaron. But the uniform is in Cooperstown right now. And as Josh mentioned, if you go to a Braves game and you go through Monument Garden, right where the Hank Aaron statue is, right down there in front of him in one of those big glass cases where the World Series trophies are, you'll find the baseball that was hit for number 715 right over that left center field wall, caught by Tom House, who you've heard on this show tell the story about catching number 715, and also the bat that Hank used to break Babe Ruth's all-time home run record. So some very cool stuff that is right there, a little piece of the Hall of Fame right there in Monument Grove at Truist Park. So really cool to have the opportunity to catch up with him and to hear a little bit about some of the great Brave stuff that is on its way to the Hall of Fame. And if you have not been, I know I've said this multiple times, it sounds like a broken record, it is worth the trip. You will enjoy yourself. You'll be immersed in the history of the game and see some of the coolest artifacts that you could possibly imagine. And the Hall of Fame exhibit also changes. It rotates seasonally, year over year. It's not just, hey, I went one time and oh, I saw everything and that's all I need to see. I went in 2005, saw a whole bunch of stuff, took a whole bunch of pictures. I went in 2018 and I saw a whole bunch more stuff and took even more pictures and had even more fun. And I didn't really spend as much time in the gallery where the plaques are, although obviously it is fun to walk through there and see the collective that is all of the gentlemen who've been enshrined in the Hall of Fame. And five more went in on Sunday. And I want to hear a little bit from each one of these guys because it's a truly unique class. It goes all the way back to the 60s with Dick Allen, through the 70s with Dave Parker, and then right on into the modern game where we have first Billy Wagner, then CeCe Sabathia and Ichiro Suzuki. Just five Hall of Fame quality players in this class, a really, really solid class. And I want to hear a little bit from, I think, the guy that he may have closed the ceremony, but he's going to open up because he did a lot of leading off in his career, and that's going to be Ichiro Suzuki. A little something that I thought was awfully fun for him. He was able to, I think, reflect on his career in a way that maybe we haven't necessarily heard as much from a guy like Ichiro Suzuki, who was not front and center talking to the press each and every night, but just talking a little bit about the opportunity to pile up what was, I would say, a sterling resume. But does the resume impress everyone? I think that's a question that Ichiro wanted to ask on this day. And since it's his day, we'll let him ask it.
Baseball taught me what it means to be a professional. And I believe that is the main reason I am here today. Not because my skills are better than others. 3,000 hits or 262 hits in one season are achievements recognized by the writers. Well, all but one of you.
All but one.
And by the way, the offer for that writer to have dinner at my home has now expired.
Man, you talk about what would have been a cool dinner. However, I would say this. I wouldn't want to go have dinner under the circumstance of being the one person that was the naysayer for one of the greatest hitters that we're ever going to see in this generation or any other. And that's the fun thing, too, about, you know, the Hall of Fame is we have a lot of arguments about generational talents and who's better, this guy or that guy. And, oh, well, Babe Ruth wouldn't be any good now. And if you put so-and-so in a time machine and send them back to the 20s, they'd be the greatest player of all time. Well, maybe. But this is the collection of all the great talents. And Ichiro Suzuki unquestionably belongs among those. Over 4,000 hits in his career between his time in Japan, first his first career, and then his Major League Baseball career, where he eclipsed 3,000 right here in the States. So some very, very impressive stuff from Ichiro Suzuki. Let's hear one more for him, because when you think about the advent of Japanese stars becoming Major League Baseball stars, there is one particular name that he wanted to point out and thank on his day in Cooperstown, and that was Hideo Nomo.
I was searching for something that I could not find. In the middle of my internal struggle, something historic happened. Hideo Nomo became the first major leaguer from Japan in my lifetime. His success inspired many, including me. Thanks to him, MLB was always in the news in Japan, and MLB games were broadcast on TV. Because of Hideo Nomo's courage, my eyes suddenly opened to the idea of challenging myself by going somewhere I never imagined. Nomo-san, ありがとうございました。
That's just very cool. And it takes, I think, a lot of effort, if you will, to push yourself outside of your comfort zone. I think we've all had to do it and tried to do it at times in our life. I mean, you've needed to do it, I'm sure. I know I have. Not the easiest thing in the world to do, though. But Hideo Nomo was able to step into stardom in the States, and that inspired a young Ichiro Suzuki to come and be one of the greatest hitters in the history of Major League Baseball. Let's talk about one of the greatest closers in Major League Baseball, a guy that finished a career right here in Atlanta with over 400 saves. I believe the lefty saves record are one of the highest totals ever by a lefty as far as saves are concerned. And you want to talk about strikeouts? You want to talk about dominance? Need to talk about Billy Wagner. It's a shame he had to wait till his 10th and final year, but it is not a shame that he was standing on that dais with an opportunity to be reunited with a couple of his very close friends and teammates from some of the great Houston Astros teams of the late 90s and early 2000s. Here's Billy Wagner thanking Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell.
Who could have imagined when I debuted in 1995 I would take the field with two future Hall of Famers, and now I'm joining them. It was Craig Biggio. Bish, even though you whined and complained about pitchers, I still loved you. You brought consistency every day, and your competitive fire helped drive me to be my very best. Thank you. Baggy, where do I start? It wasn't your words. You are a man of few words. It was your look, your glare. That's what let everyone know if things were okay or if we needed to get our act together. I loved your grit. You taught me one of baseball's greatest lessons, how to show up and play after a bad day. No excuses. You show me what a big leaguer looks like, and your friendship means the world to me.
Very cool things for guys to be able to celebrate not only their playing days beside one another, but also to be standing on that stage. Hall of Fame teammates reunited again, and again, very deserving for Billy Wagner. Very happy for him, and I think we'll see some more closers maybe have the light shined on them in the future, because the game has certainly evolved and the complete game is no longer part of it. So if you're able to slam the door, earn a bunch of saves, you might just punch your ticket to Cooperstown. Let's talk about somebody who was not interested in giving people saves necessarily. He wanted all the innings for himself, at least in that first half of his career, and that was Carsten Charles Sabathia, CC Sabathia. You might know him as. Made his career in Cleveland, in Milwaukee, and finally with the New York Yankees, and talked a little bit about the journey that he went on in order to find the opportunities that he needed to find and the driving force behind all of that, not just necessarily going out there chasing wins, but focusing on what was best for family. Here is CC Sabathia.
Amber and I have always been we. We picked the Yankees. We bought a house in New Jersey. 17 years later, that's where we still live. It's where we raised a family. When I wrote my book, I dedicated it to our children because that's still our biggest accomplishment to this day. The best part of being retired is watching what our kids do. Watching Lil C develop into a man and a ball player at the University of Houston has been amazing. Jaden is on her way to her career in arts management, so we help her study by going to Broadway shows together. And I've seen Saya win two national dance championships, making me a dance dad. And I always say, if my life was a movie, she'd be the main character. And Carter just got home from the Hank Aaron Invitational in Vero Beach. We're somewhere every weekend. It's insane, and I love it.
That was CC Sabathia talking about the family influence for him on his career, which was obviously a big one. But you look at what he was able to do in 19 years, 251 wins, 374 ERA, and 3,000 career strikeouts. Those are the kind of numbers, especially that 3,000 strikeouts, we may not see as much of in the future. And I know he also spoke about the influence that Dave Parker had on him as a young fan growing up and getting into the game and feeling like he saw players that, you know, quote, looked like him out there affecting the game on the highest stage, on the biggest moments. It was 18% representation by African-Americans in the game of baseball in the late 80s. That's the highest it ever was. And Sabathia is now committed to trying to bring that number up now. So a very big thing for him. He said he does not want to be the last black pitcher to be giving a Hall of Fame speech, and that I thought was something really, really sweet to be able to point out, to have the opportunity to do that. Now let's talk about a couple of guys, and Dave Parker's going to be one of them. We'll get to him in a moment, that waited quite a while and unfortunately were unable to attend their Hall of Fame induction. Dick Allen's wife, Willa, was on hand to thank everyone for honoring the what I think is one of the great overrated sluggers, perhaps, or excuse me, overlooked sluggers, not overrated, overlooked, underrated. That's what we're going for, over-under. Got to get it right. But one of the, I think, under-recognized sluggers of the 1960s of his era and into the 1970s as well was Dick Allen, one of the most dangerous hitters of his era. Here is his wife, Willa, talking about the honor for her husband.
Today, his name is a shrine among the greatest to ever play the game. And I know beyond all the applause, Dick would want this moment to inspire others to play with passion, to live with heart, and to always be true to yourself. Thank you for honoring Dick. Thank you for believing in him. And thank you for finally bringing him home. Thank you.
A rookie of the year, an MVP, now a Hall of Famer, is Dick Allen. And let's wrap up with Dave Parker. This is one that tugs at the heartstrings because Dave passed away just last month. He finally lost his battle with Parkinson's disease. I know his family is very dedicated to trying to find a cure for that disease, for the research for that. But in terms of honoring the baseball legacy of Dave Parker, long, long, long overdue. He was also a former MVP, a multiple-time All-Star, one of the great sluggers of the late 70s into the 1980s, and a great mentor for, I think, an entire generation of young African-American athletes and baseball players who looked up to him and gave him the nickname Pops, a pretty cool one. Let's hear from Dave Parker II, the son of Dave Parker, who just happened to have a little something special on hand for the audience at the Hall of Fame for the induction speech of his father, the Cobra. Let's take a listen to this.
Pops wanted me to leave everyone with this poem that he wrote that he gave me a long time ago. And he said if he ever made it here to read it. So that's what I'm about to do. Here I am, 39, about damn time. I know I had to wait a little, but that's what you do with fine age wine. I'm a pirate for life. Wouldn't have it no other way. That was my family. Even though I didn't go on parade day, I love y'all. The Bucks own my heart. Because those two championships I got, y'all played in the first part. I'm in the hall now. You can't take that away. That statue better look good. You know I got a pretty face. Top tier athlete, fashion icon, sex symbol. No reason to list the rest of my credentials. I'm him, period. The Cobra. Known for my rocket arm, and I will run any catcher over. To my friends, families, I love y'all. Thanks for staying by my side. I told y'all Cooperstown would be my last ride. So the star of day will be in the sky tonight. Watch it glow. But I didn't lie. On my documentary, I told y'all I wouldn't show. Thank you.
Always with a sense of humor. There was none quite like Dave Parker, a true original. Just one of the great players inducted into the Hall of Fame, one of five in the class of 2025, honored on Sunday in Cooperstown. When we come back, we'll turn our attention back to what's going on with the Atlanta Braves the week to come, the road trip that continues, and the trade deadline breathing down their necks as well, and a trade on Sunday to talk about as well. It comes your way next on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Back to Grant McCauley for more From the Diamond. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer from Mark Spain Real Estate, 855-299-SOLD. On Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in to From the Diamond on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. I am Grant McCauley. We're live from the Kia Studios on Sunday, closing out this edition of From the Diamond. Appreciate everyone riding along and enjoying, I hope, some Hall of Fame talk. We had a lot of that going on because it was a very big Sunday up in Cooperstown. First hour, though, we dedicated to what in the world is going on with the Atlanta Braves this week. Maybe that's what I'll start changing the segment to. Instead of this week in Braves baseball, it's what in the world is wrong with the Atlanta Braves. And the answer would be a lot, unfortunately, at this point. And we got to jump back into some of that. But we don't often have breaking news on a Sunday, which is when we record this show, between 5 and 7. If you're listening to the podcast, that's why I'm giving you this timestamp, because we don't have a ton of information other than to tell you there was a trade that the Braves made to just try to get somebody in that might be able to cover some innings. You had to do something, I feel like, is how you'd probably categorize this one. Eric Fetty who was cut by the St. Louis Cardinals or designated for assignment by the Cardinals a few days ago, has been traded to the Braves for a player to be named later or cash considerations. A right-hander this year, 3-10, 5.22 ERA. That is not a sterling resume. 4.5 nearly. Walks per nine, just over 5.5 strikeouts per nine. 32 years old. Coming off a really good year last year, and it seemed like perhaps the Cardinals would be able to count on him to help out eating some innings for them again this year, but that was just not the case. Having a really tough season, and obviously the Cardinals felt like whatever they're going to do over the next couple of months, they can do it without Eric Fetty. But as we've chronicled on this edition of the show, you've got five starting pitchers on the injured list if you're the Atlanta Braves. Your opening day rotation, the entire thing, is on the injured list. And the corresponding move as well, by the way, to put Eric Fetty on the 40-man roster for the Braves was transferring Grant Holmes to the 60-day IL, which should tell you two things. Number one, his season is over. And number two, which is closely related to number one, the news about his elbow and the injury that pushed him out of Saturday's start is obviously grim for him. We'll keep our fingers crossed, hope it's not what you would imagine that it is when you hear an elbow inflammation issue go on and somebody lands on the injured list, but we'll await the official word from the team as far as that is concerned. But Grant Holmes has been moved to the 60-day IL, where he will join A.J. Smith-Shawver, who's out for the year, Spencer Schwellenbach, who may or may not pitch again this year, we'll see, and of course Chris Sale, who fractured his rib cage. That was, I don't know if that was the first domino to fall. I guess maybe Smith-Shawver was, but let me back up. Reynaldo Lopez, also on the 60-day IL. I've been very, on top of not forgetting the fact that Reynaldo Lopez is in this rotation, but he made one start this year before he ended up on the 60-day IL because he had to have a shoulder surgery. So a lot of different things going on. And you now got everybody on the 60-day IL at this point. That's just almost unfathomably bad. I mean, it is unfathomably bad. To find basically a week after the All-Star break that your entire rotation is no longer your entire rotation. Now, the only silver lining the Braves have is they came in with that group expecting to get Spencer Strider back. They have Spencer Strider now and not a lot else. So that's kind of the story of what the Braves rotation is right now. And as I talked about, and we can rehash it a little bit, I mean, are you looking for organizational arms like Jackson Stevens to come up and help you out? Are you looking for some of your younger prospects who might be able to come up and help out in some way, shape, form, or fashion? Some of the prospects, obviously, Hurston Waldrop. We saw him last year, albeit briefly and probably too soon in his young career. J.R. Ritchie, who has been pitching very well in the minor leagues this year, as has Blake Burkhalter. A couple of arms to keep in mind for possible auditions in August and September. Don't know that we'll see Didier Fuentes again. We'll see. I think that a lot of things needed to be maybe thought through a little bit more there, but the Braves were just trying to spark a little something. And they brought him up based on arm talent, which he clearly has, but experience factor was not there for Didier Fuentes. So we'll see if he's in this mix again. But is it a Jackson Stevens, a Davis Daniel, Austin Cox, Nathan Wiles? These are the other names that you're looking at in the Gwinnett rotation. And you can't look at Ian Anderson right now and expect him to do much because he's on the injured list in AAA Gwinnett. So just a lot has gone wrong for the Braves as far as their 2025 rotation is concerned. It doesn't get much worse than losing five starting pitchers. Your entire opening day rotation is now on the 60-day IL as Grant Holmes is transferred over there with the acquisition of Eric Fetty, the 32-year-old veteran righty that the Braves picked up from the Cardinals on Sunday. Let's stick a pin in that. Let's talk about somebody that I think is universally appreciated and respected around these parts. His name is Jesse Chavez. We've seen him a couple of times this year, but we may never see him again on a mound in an official capacity for any team because he spent a little bit of time with our buddies over at Foul Territory, with Scott Braun, with Todd Frazier, with Eric Kratz, and let us know exactly where he is weighing in on his playing career. Jesse Chavez, ready to call it a career, coaching perhaps in the offing for a guy who goes by the nickname of Coach. We'll find out about all of that, but here's Jesse Chavez just discussing his decision to step into retirement and off the mound.
This has been a great ride, way more than I expected to from a 42nd round draft pick. The thing was, I was given a gift early on. I understood it, but it was how am I going to make it last? How can I keep it going for this long? And I always said, I want to go out the way I came in, being able to roll out of bed and throw a baseball. And fortunately, I'm still able to do that. And like I said, I had a conversation with my college coach. He's one of the biggest mentors in my life. Then you go to the background of my family, you know, my wife and kids being there the entire time from day one, you know, and then allowing me to go through this, being a knucklehead and just being stubborn with this, trying to get what we wanted to get accomplished, you know, to where we're at today. The guys I had my first year in pro ball all the way up through to my last day, you know, all the conversations we had, I still took that and tried to learn. And, you know, this game's still about adapting, right? So I felt like I went from throwing 91, 92 when I came in to throwing 100 and then now throwing, you know, 89, 90. So I knew how to, I always understood how to, if I wanted to stick around, you had to make moves, make adjustments, whether it was, you know, moving on the rubber, throwing a different pitch, committing to one, banging one because it doesn't work anymore. You know, it was all about that and the conversations I had early on.
Well, Jesse Chavez talked a lot about a great many topics, the experience he had in his career, and obviously his love for coaching to pass that along to that next generation. He said, let me take my knowledge and my experience and give it to someone so that they don't have to take multiple steps back to take that step forward, and how rewarding it would be to see those guys, the ones that he could influence, the ones that he could help out to be holding a Cy Young trophy or even better, a World Series trophy, whatever that may be. I think Jesse Chavez has a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge, and the desire to pass that along. And that, of course, could be valuable, and I think he'd be great in any clubhouse he steps into. Perhaps it'll be the Braves clubhouse. We'll see if that's one of the many discussions that are had after the season is over. But let's hear a little bit about Jesse Chavez, or from Jesse Chavez, talking about his time in Atlanta, which initially began in his second year in the big leagues way back in 2010. It was brief, but he played for Bobby Cox. You might have forgotten about that. Here's Jesse summing up everything about his experience in Atlanta, especially that over the last few years.
Oh, from day one, it was great. You could go back to 2010 till now. It's all been open arms. Anybody that comes in, you're welcomed. You're part of the crew. Whether you've got making your debut or you've got 15 years in, you're welcome no matter what stature you are as far as what you've done in the game. And that's the best part about it. That makes it easier for you to show up every day, show up with a smile, and go out and do your business. And that's, you know, that's a testament to the organization up top, to being able to do that year in and year out and put that type of lineup and that type of roster together to where they all feed together. They all feed off of one another. The conversations that they have aren't afraid to have, because that's what you're going to have in order to be successful. The tough ones. Never a questioning conversation. It's always a meaningful and a moving forward conversation. So that's something that we all leave at the door, which is our ego, and understanding what we want to get accomplished today is when we step out into that dugout and up those stairs, there's one thing, and that's get a W for that night and, you know, do our best to be able to contribute to, you know, what we wanted to do in 21 year in and year out. And that's awesome for Alex to do that for us and the coaching staff, the training staff. Fortunate part about us this year was we got hit by the injury bug in a year where you're going in, you're looking at it like, man, this seems like another special year, you know, but sometimes our motto was we always thought we could thrive in adversity, and we still can.
That was Jesse Chavez talking about his time with the Atlanta Braves, and obviously he held the organization in high regard. The organization holds him in high regard. You don't come back as many times as Jesse Chavez has returned without having just the deepest respect, and that's a two-way street, I believe, as well, as far as all of that goes. But yeah, Jesse Chavez calling it a career, was 18, 19 years in the big leagues from a 42nd round draft pick. And think about this. This is a fun little note. I don't know that I've ever thought about it this way, but Jesse Chavez was drafted by the Chicago Cubs in the 39th round out of high school. He decided to go to college. When he came out of college, which, by the way, was the same college that Nacho Alvarez also attended, but when he came out of college, he got drafted in the 42nd round. So he dropped three rounds. I don't know that the signing bonus between the 39th and the 42nd round is altogether all that much. But let me tell you, Jesse Chavez got every bit out of the mileage of his career in order to do the things that he did and to help the Braves out in the 2021 season, which he told a great story about that. And I'd encourage you to listen to the whole thing, Foul Territory TV. You can go to the YouTube channel and listen to it. But there, nobody had called Jesse Chavez in 2021. He got let go in spring training, and the Braves decided, hey, we might need a little bit of help in this bullpen. They gave him a call. He came in, and the rest, as they say, was history, and Jesse Chavez and his beautiful hats were on display in a World Series parade, a trip to the White House, and beyond. So many beautiful things, and just one of the great guys in the game. You always pull for a guy like Jesse Chavez. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of other notes. How about one that I think Braves fans have been looking for pretty much all season long, and that is Michael Harris. The regression of Michael Harris in 2025 had been just downright alarming. But with his revamped batting stance and some much-needed results starting to manifest as well, it seems like Harris is finally coming out of this season-long slumber at the plate. It's just a shame we can't enjoy it as part of a bigger offensive renaissance for the entire team. That just does not seem to be in the cards this year. You get one or two guys going, well, two more are going through it. You get those guys going, well, now so-and-so is not doing what he was doing before. And look, that's the story of the 162, but it just never seemed to be this stark and this hard and this difficult to get more guys going at a time than one or two, which has kind of been the Braves story. Harris was batting .210 with a .234 on-base percentage, six homers, 44 runs knocked in 93 games in the first half. He was statistically, as far as OPS is concerned, on-base plus slugging, the worst qualified position player in Major League Baseball out of, I believe it's about 160 or so. Michael Harris was way down at the bottom there. But he made a slight adjustment in his batting stance, I believe, right before the All-Star break, and certainly coming out of it, that looks a lot more reminiscent of the 2022 Michael Harris when he was called up from the minor leagues the first time. Now, he dropped his hands as an adjustment during his rookie season. You might kind of notice there's another guy that plays over in right field that moved his hands down and had some great results, helped his plate coverage and his power, but Harris clearly needed to go back to something that made him more comfortable. This, I believe, was the answer to it. Coming into Sunday, and by the way, on Sunday he had two more hits, Harris was batting .400 with an .867 slugging percentage, three homers, a couple of triples, a double, five runs batted in. So six extra base hits among 12 hits in 32 plate appearances, and he was able to finally put an end to that little 47-game walkless drought that he had going on as well. And that, you'd like to see a few more walks mixed in there, but the way Michael Harris is swinging the bat now, the decisions that he's making at the plate, it does appear that he is starting to turn the corner. And I think Harris and most Braves fans, pretty much everybody that's been watching the Braves this year, wanted to see this, was waiting to see this, and finally you're seeing a little bit there. Now, one other question mark, I think, that's been in the Braves rotation, or excuse me, not rotation, the Braves lineup all year long, has been Ozzie Albies. Is he going to finally get on a run and look a lot more like the Ozzie Albies we've been accustomed to seeing when healthy? Ozzie has not missed a bunch of time this year. He's not had to deal with multiple broken bones or some of the other things that had him off the field in 2024. But there's been a lot of talk, I think, about what do you do with Ozzie Albies? His year has been among the big disappointments for the team, no two ways about it, but it's caused people to ask, is it even worth picking up his $7 million option for next year, or do you just reassess and move on? Now, the Braves will have to pay a $4 million buyout on Ozzie. That would do, by my very simple math, to tell me that it's worth taking a $3 million flyer on a guy that can do the things that Ozzie can do. He's in his late 20s, and see if he can recapture the magic. If he doesn't, you're not on the hook for a lot, but if you make this decision now, I think you could regret it if you had to watch Ozzie Albies get right in somebody else's uniform and you weren't going to have to pay him that much to begin with. But you need to have depth. You need to have layers. You need to have some help. And the Braves have just not had enough of that this year. And I think that is probably the story of the season, and it's definitely the story of this show. Coming up for the Braves, they will head to Kansas City to take on the Royals for a three-game series. Then it's three against the Cincinnati Reds, including that Speedway Classic game that will be going on next weekend. So we'll have a lot to talk about, of course, when we jump back into From the Diamond this time a week from now. I want to thank Josh Rauch, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, for joining me on the show. Get to hear a little bit from all the inductees. I want to thank Garrett Chapman for a great job getting that audio lined up for us as well and handling the show duties today. We'll catch up with you next week here on From the Diamond. Until then, I'm Grant McCauley. This is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. You can find us on the Odyssey app. And until next week, so long, everyone.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. 100.